Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats. I'm excited this week because on the show I have podcaster Dr. Fiona Lovely. And I just want to explain how I found out about Dr. Fiona Lovely. When I came to Houston and I was just sort of finding my feet and I was like just, you know, going to the gym, working out, and I was getting my work done, I decided to start like listening to lots of podcasts to see what was out there. And I found this one called Not Your Mother's Menopause. And I thought, what a great name for it, because I remember asking my mum all about menopause and she was like, I don't know, I think I had a few migraines or something. And anyway, so I started listening, it was like no information at all. And so then I started listening to this podcast and I just loved it. And the two things I loved about it, one was the name, Not Your Mother's Menopause. It's such a great name. And also Dr. Fiona Lovely's name and voice. Now, when she starts speaking in a minute, you'll understand she's got a voice that's just like caramel. I love it. So welcome to the show, Dr. Fiona.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for that intro, Amanda. That was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And your voice, I would be like on the treadmill doing a run. And for some reason, it just kept me calm and I didn't get as out of breath. And I was like, oh, this is perfect for me. But it was also just your advice. It was just so very short and informative and practical and to the point. You know, you don't spend too long waffling on like I can, I think sometimes. But no, I really like the way you approach this whole phase of our life. And I'll just give a little bit more background for people listening. You have 10 years of clinical primary care helping women with menopausal and life changes, I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think we're going into, 13th year now of practice.
Yeah, 13th year. Wow. Good for you. I know I'm like 25 years in fitness and the personal training world. It's completely changed. And here I am, menopausing with you.
I love it.
So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me, first of all, why did you start your podcast? What was the impetus?
Well, I'm one of those people that's just multi-passionate when it comes to my practice, which is really helping as many people as I can. And I had just completed major study in the brain and functional neurology. And I was fixing so many broken brains that I just didn't have the time to get out and speak to the women about the hormones and the menopause, the perimenopause, which is really my first love. And so I thought, okay, how can I get this information out to women in such a fashion that it's quick, it's concise, it's usable, and it's fun? And about that time, I came across a friend who was doing podcasting, and he walked me through the process. And I think we're on our 63rd episode at this point. And the rest is history.
Who knew there was that much to talk about?
Oh my God, yes, right?
You go down this menopause rabbit hole, it's crazy. I start talking about something and I'm like, oh my God, but I now should talk about this. And it's crazy. I mean, there's so much information out there. Mm-hmm. But I know that one of your primary objectives is just to try and just give women solutions and educate them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so. It turns out there's an awful lot we can do to have comfort during this difficult transition.
Yeah, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. And so I know that that's one of your one of your goals when you meet with women and when you talk to them, it's getting to the root cause of problems, right? And I know that's the same for me. I'm very much a solution-based coach. So I don't look for like a magic pill. I look for like, let's look at your whole lifestyle. Let's look at your, you know, what you're eating, how you're sleeping, how you're managing stress, what type of exercise you're doing. Are you supporting what your body needs right now? And I think that just looking at your life holistically at this time, do you feel like the same thing, that it's like just the most important thing?
Absolutely. It has to be. I mean, there's really no solution, proper solution for women in a pill, period. And so what has to happen is you have to look at your lifestyle factors. And, you know, I think a lot of us have really just been avoiding that for a great many years. I seem to think it has a cultural reference here that women are the caregivers of everyone else up until a certain age, and your children presumably are old enough to take care of themselves if you have them, or your career is old enough to take care of itself. And then you can start to sort of reevaluate the things in your life and lifestyle that may not be the healthiest for you. And, you know, that's not just diet and exercise, although I have to say the single best thing you can do for yourself is take a real good assessment of, are you moving your body? Are you doing it on a weekly basis? How many times a week? Are you eating healthy foods? Look, we all have foods that we like to eat that aren't so healthy, but it's that 80-20 rule. As long as you're doing well 80% of the time, you can have that 20% splurge, if you will. So yes, the answer is absolutely. You've got to look at that holistic way to really find peace in perimenopause. And I think probably the biggest factor other than the food and exercise is, are you happy with where you are in your life? Are there things that need to be purged? And quite often that's people we've tolerated that have become toxic.
Oh, I love that. I love it because I've done it myself, probably not consciously, but I've just removed myself from an environment that doesn't support my values. And I think that's so important to our good mental health, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing to consider is, you know, and it was Dr. Northrup's work that taught me this, is that for a woman, the perimenopausal years are essentially the halfway point where we can say, okay, the first half of my life, I've done a really great job taking care of other people, whether it's a spouse or your children or a career or education or whatever your choice is. But now you get to say, okay, I've done all this outside stuff to build a sort of legitimacy or that self-sacrifice that women do. But now at this point in my life, I choose to let it truly be self-serving for me. And listen, this is a difficult thing for women because we're taught that the good girls are the ones that get what they want in their lives. You've got to be a good girl. Well, in the societal norms that we have, the good girls aren't selfish. There's a lot of baggage around that.
You mean you're trying to tell us to put ourselves first for women?
Oh, yes!
Imagine that.
Yes, imagine. The world would be a better place if we did. Well, no doubt.
I mean, it serves a purpose, right? So let's like just dig deeper into that. It really serves a purpose as far as I'm concerned, because especially when we're sort of like knee deep in the crap symptoms that can floor us, right? You know, that can leave us like literally crawl into the kitchen for our cup of tea. Like I realized when I was like at my worst that if I didn't take care of myself and put myself as priority, then everybody else suffered. I mean, it was that simple. Like I had to be in a good place for everybody's life to be bearable in my home. Mm-hmm. And it really got down to quite a low level before I realized that I wasn't proactive doing it. It was a reactive thing from my side. But since then, and actually since working with other psychologists and stuff, I've realized the importance, and it's so good to feel this way, like to say to yourself, what do I have to do today to feel my best, and how will that impact others?
Absolutely. What's the best action I can take today to be whole? And, you know, that sometimes is a difficult transition for women, but there's gold on the other side of that. So keep at it. And it's tough, especially if you've spent 40 years taking care of others before yourself. So I like Louise Hay's mirror work when I feel like I can't even, you know, put one foot in front of the other. And that is positive affirmations that you can speak to yourself. And there's lots of lots of information online if you wanted to know more about that. But, you know.
And what type of thing, how does that look in practice?
Yeah. Tell yourself that you're enough. Tell yourself that you matter. And I'm having an internal giggle moment. You guys know the Saturday Night Live skit. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people love me. Pretty much like that.
I wish I knew SNL. I really have to get with the culture. I've only been here 20 years. I still don't watch it. I will. I'll look it up.
Yes, that's a good one. And that's very much what it looks like. And the idea is, if you can't look yourself in the eye and say, I love you and you matter, then how can anybody else look you in the eye and say, I love you and you matter? You have to be first.
Yeah, we have to stop judging ourselves as well. I mean, one of the hardest things I think for women going, as well as the symptomatic side of menopause, is they're changing their physical appearance, because things do start changing, whether we want them to or not, from the hormonal changes. I mean, our skin texture changes, our fat deposits shift. You know, we might have more water retention, and maybe you've put on a little bit of weight as well. And to be judging yourself on your appearance alone is really just not good enough in my eyes. You haven't lost the person you were prior to this. You're still there. You just need to just remember how awesome you were, because you still are. And I think I felt the same way. I've looked at myself and thought, oh my goodness, this is terrible, you know, but I know that the work for self-improvement, it really does work, and it can just give you a sense of peace.
Certainly. Certainly. And the way I look at it is for myself, I embrace the changes, because with those physical changes come a hell of a pile of wisdom that I wouldn't give back for nothing. So to me, I go, it means I've got to have a little bit of, what do they call it? Glitter highlights. Have you heard this?
No. What does that mean? What does that
mean? It means gray hair. Gray hair.
Oh, the old silver fox.
So yes! Exactly. About 3 years ago, I quit coloring my hair. I thought, to heck with this. I was coloring it because I thought it was boring. I had no idea if there were grays in there. Turns out there's a few, but you know what? I've earned those. I'm okay with it. So I think it's a matter of perspective and just changing it. I think we live in a culture that if you watch the television and you look at popular media, women are only useful when we're youthful. And I think that's horseshit, if I can be perfectly blunt. And we need to normalize that women aging is a beautiful thing. Look at Madonna. Look at Oprah. Oh my God, Martha Stewart. These are women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s.
And they're beautiful. And there's also now a new wave of these over 50 models with the silver hair, and they're beautiful. Like I can see they give me aging goals, you know, when I look at them. But
yes.
It's going back to the question you said a few minutes ago, like, are you happy in your life? And if you're not, it's time to purge. And when it comes to things like popular media, that's where I like people to start purging as well. Just unfollow people. Don't pick up the magazines. Don't watch the things that are going to sort of like drive you to that despondency and despair. It's just not serving anybody any good purpose at all, right?
Absolutely. I think comparing ourselves to others is just kind of over. We're all so dissimilar. We have our own unique talents and beauty and That's what we should be embracing. And I think the media does a good job of trying to make us keep up with the Joneses and think that there's a standard of this and that, whether it's intelligence or beauty or you know, there's just rampant ageism for sure, especially for women, but men too. And I just say, just don't pay attention. Turn it off. Television's not great for your brain anyways.
No, I know, especially the blue light for your circadian rhythm. I'm so into this like sleep thing at the moment, because now that's my latest symptom, is like having insomnia. But I've had a very good habit around my bedtimes for a long time. Like there's no screens after. I have a good hour without screen time before I go to bed, and it really helps. And I've been reading a lot of studies recently about the impact. There's a great Harvard study about the impact of, you know, the blue lighting on our circadian rhythm and our production of melatonin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, there's a little sidetrack. Sorry.
No, it's good. It's so important, because insomnia or some sort of sleep disturbance is one of the top five symptoms of women in perimenopause.
Yeah, it is. And what I'd like to spend the second half of this show talking about is just, I thought I'd pick on like the three top symptoms just to discuss, just to see if you have a different take on it. To me, it's always good to create a dialogue. So let's sort of start with like sleep. So one of the things I do, is I do encourage a good sleep routine that includes lack of screens, going to bed at the same time, making sure you aim to get 8 hours sleep, maybe a bit more if you can. I mean, I'm greedy with my sleep. And then also doing things to reduce your anxieties and stresses around bedtime. But is there anything sort of like that you think you found has been really helpful to women? Because sometimes falling asleep isn't the problem. It's the waking up that's the problem, mm-hmm. isn't it? Right? The mid- mm-hmm. Have you had those yet, Fiona?
Yeah, certainly I have. I've had them personally as well as have seen them professionally for years. So
yes, I meant personally, yeah.
for sure. I've noticed that in the second half of my cycle, in the luteal phase, is when I tend not to sleep through the night, which I find really interesting. And I'm not sure what the connection is to progesterone on that, but there's obviously something. So,
I've been reading some studies purely because of the, you know, the nature of progesterone being that sort of anti-anxiety type hormone, that when we are when that progesterone has reduced, that, you know, that when we do wake up, we don't have that like type of sedative effect from the progesterone. Mm. That's one of the theories, and it's not a theory, it's actually a study I read out there. So there has to be something to do with the fluctuating hormones, without a doubt.
No doubt. I think one of the other things that's really important about looking at sleep, so your suggestion's fantastic. You absolutely must have a fairly rigid bedtime routine 7 days of the week. People will think that going to sleep later and sleeping in on the weekend is a great idea, but that's one of the worst things you can do actually to feel rested. And something else to pay attention to is the more hours of sleep you get before midnight, those are the most restful sleep hours, and they're the ones that repay the debt of sleep that you've accumulated through your college years or your kid raising years or etc. So if you can maximize that time, I used to be quite the night owl, but now my husband and I have a really quite rigid bedtime routine that goes something like this. It's 9 o'clock, the dog takes herself to bed, we follow. And it's lights off, books down by 10 at the latest, if not before. Like there's some days I make it till about 8:50 and then I'm already in a bed asleep. But I also wake at 5 a.m. naturally. So that's what happens when you start to repay that.
And so is it something to do with the level of deep sleep or REM sleep that you get in those hours?
I believe so.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I believe so. But that's really like once you start creating a routine for yourself where you're maximizing that time before midnight, look out, because it's not going to be very long before you're starting to feel like a different person. because you cannot repay the sleep debt by sleeping in on the weekends or sleeping in the morning if you can, an extra hour trying to squeeze out an alarm clock. And actually, I find the alarm clocks just are so disruptive. And like, who likes the alarm clock? I mean, it just makes you grumpy. So if you can get to the place where you don't need to have the alarm clock, that you wake naturally because you've slept a natural cycle, that's what you're aiming for.
Yeah, really, and it can take time. I think it's worth telling people that, you know, finding like a routine that fits in with your lifestyle and everything, it can take a little bit of getting used to, so be patient.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it takes time to rebuild that, depending on how deep and wide your sleep debt is. It, you know, it was probably 6 months for me before I was waking without an alarm naturally. So it just takes time to get there. So be patient. This is not an overnight fix. But I think the other thing that gets missed when it comes to that sleep interruption is blood sugar. So I'd love to talk about that if now's a good time.
Yeah, blood sugar with the insulin and the cortisol as well. Let's go for that. Because this sort of covers a number of things anyway, the blood sugar anyway. There's a lot of symptoms because of this. So yeah, let's go there.
Yes, sure. So it turns out by research, the single best thing a woman can do to help her transition in perimenopause and avoid the symptoms that we hear about commonly, whether it's hot flashes, night sweats, low libido, heart palpitations, whatever the menopausal thing is for you. Everybody's flavor is a little bit different. The single most important thing by research is actually stress reduction. And the reason why that's important is because we've got to be able to have organ reserves available with the adrenal glands. So the reason why adrenal glands are so important here, now these are the stress response glands that sit atop the kidney. They're walnut shaped in size, and their job is to do the stress response. There's a whole cascade of hormones and neurotransmitters that are connected to adrenal function. Now, when you get to the place in your perimenopause where you're skipping periods, it means that you're no longer ovulating every month. Now, progesterone is produced for women up to that point by the ovaries at ovulation. But once you no longer have the ovulation cascade, your adrenal glands take over that progesterone production.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So they have a choice. They can go, it's something called the pregnenolone steal. And the pregnenolone is the mother hormone of either stress response hormone cortisol or progesterone. So depending on where you are, if you're stressed or if you're not, you either make progesterone or you'll make more cortisol. And trust me, sisters, you want to make more progesterone. I mean, look, if you're about to be run over by a bus, you want the cortisol. But chances are you need the stress reliever more, which is the progesterone, which has a protective effect.
Yes, and just in case people aren't 100% sure what cortisol is, I mean, you did sort of touch on it. I mean, can we just expand on, you know, how it is sure. It's a response to not just, it's good and bad response, right? So, and we need to find the correct level in our body. Do you want to just explain cortisol a bit more and then what it's like to have too much cortisol, what the impact of that is?
Cortisol is the hormone that is released by the adrenal glands during times of stress, and it will cause basically all the stuff you want to happen if, like I said, you're about to be run down by a bus or you're being chased by a saber-toothed cat. You want your heart rate to go up. You want more energy to go to the cells of the muscles so that they can move faster. You want your blood pressure to change to give you more power, if you will. It shunts blood away from the extremities and into the core part of the brain and the vital organs. So its job is to make you run faster, basically. Now, adrenal glands were never evolved, if you will, to handle constant stress like we put them through. And so we're in a bit of a flux right now because we physically haven't adapted yet to the amount of stress we allow in our current lifestyle, but the glands yet cannot respond. So cortisol is a love-hate thing. You want it when you need it, but we don't want to be triggering it too much, because when we do, it keeps us awake, it keeps us stimulated, it keeps us fear-based. And when we're fear-based, we're away from the highly evolved brain. We're into the primitive brain, which is a whole other conversation.
Well, that's where you're. That's where
I hope I gave you some.
That's where your neurology comes in, I'm sure.
Yes.
So, and then, so we're in a situation. Let's just create a scenario where we're in a situation. We've got this saber-toothed tiger running down the street at us in the middle of Houston, where I live. And my stress levels are going crazy. I've got all this high cortisol, and I'm not managing my stresses. And my cortisol sort of is staying with me. You know, I've got other stresses going on in my life. You know, I haven't paid the mortgage. I have to get the kids from school, and you know, I'm running on no energy because I haven't slept. So all of a sudden, I've got this high cortisol in my body. How is that related to high blood sugar? Do you want to explain that?
Well, high blood sugar gives your body what it needs to fuel that continual stress cascade. But the problem becomes, in regards to sleep, is that in order to dampen that sort of jittery response that cortisol gives us, you know, having like a triple shot of espresso, we will carb it up. So we load the sugar in. Now think of this. You've had your supper or dinner, depending on where you are and you're in the world. You've had your supper, and then about 8 o'clock, you start to get kind of snacky. So you're into the chips, you're into the ice cream, etc., which gives your body the spike of blood sugar it wants. And then you get sleepy afterwards. So it helps you go to sleep. But several hours later, what happens is the cortisol drops. Your blood sugar drops. Sorry, the adrenal glands go, uh-oh, we got a problem here. This could be a health emergency. We need to get some sugar on board. So your body then innately will spike the cortisol in order to wake you up to say, hey, feed us. We need something to eat. So the way to avoid that, so that's the women that have troubles waking in the night and can't get back to sleep. Chances are you probably have a hunger that you're not even aware of because, you know, you're in your bed and half awake and these sorts of things. So what you want to do to balance that is certainly avoid the carbs after supper. And if you can eat your supper earlier rather than later, that's healthy too. I'm not saying don't have the carbs, just make sure you have them with fat and fiber, protein as well.
Yeah,
it helps burn everything properly. But then if you have an all-protein snack right before you go to bed, so this is what I recommend, is a handful of nuts if you can. Depends if you're on autoimmune protocol or paleo diet, just depending on your restriction, you may not be able to do that. A hard-boiled egg, a scrambled egg, a piece of meat left over from supper. Something like that. No carb, just protein. It will help. It'll slow burn overnight, and it will regulate that response so that you're not waking in the night if blood sugar is the issue. And so commonly it is.
Oh, it so commonly is. And people don't always recognize that they may be struggling with stress, because I think people often assume that they're stressed when they're angry or they're snappy. And it's not always the case, right? It doesn't always, it might be when you're super fatigued. It can present itself in a number of ways, right?
Very much.
And one of the ways that I like to talk to women about stress is they sometimes notice they get more cravings. And this is, again, due to this, you know, the blood sugar. When the blood sugar drops and we get this burst of high cortisol, we go running for the carbs, right? Mm. And I know that the perimenopausal women are more sensitive to carbs, and chances are they may become a little bit insulin resistant. So we do need to keep those insulin levels managed as well. And so I know that when I talk about weight loss with women, when constantly, because that's one of the number one questions, how do I lose weight through perimenopause? I've put on all of this weight. One of the first places I go to is stress management, because we know that the high correlation between high cortisol and belly fat. Do you see that in your practice too?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it bears mentioning that when we're in the second to last phase of perimenopause, so the place where you're likely skipping periods, The average, every woman gains weight during that time. It's a physiological response to what's happening. Average weight gain in that time is 12 pounds, but you have to understand that if you are attempting to lose that weight during that time, you're working against what Mother Nature is trying to create for you in a reserve. Now, that's really tough because we make it about our willpower, we make it about our sexiness or, et cetera, right? That's not the time to be trying to lose weight. But I think a better way to handle it is to know this time could potentially be coming. So how can I make sure that my body, you know, handle the stress beforehand so my body is minimally needing that weight gain. I speculate that weight gain has to do with bone density because our bone density drops in the same phase. And so, of course, naturally weight bearing gives us our body a chance, the bones a chance to get stronger. Isn't that fascinating?
The whole time is fascinating, and I'm actually in the last stage of perimenopause, and I basically have determined that through blood work when I've got this tiny amount of estrogen left, and also I haven't had a period for like 8 or 9 months. Mm-hmm. And it was during that almost middle phase, if we can break perimenopause into three phases, mm-hmm. That I definitely saw an increase in, it was actually just a physical change in my shape. I know there was a lot of water retention. I think that's a huge thing that women need to understand, is the body will absorb more water when their hormones are fluctuating. Mm-hmm. And I remember speaking to, on one of my other podcast, Krista Scott Dixon, and I loved the conversation because she just said basically the same thing. You know, your body's smarter than you. It physiologically needs to gain some weight for a healthy hormone profile. You know, we do create some hormones from our fat cells, a moderate amount. And so, you know, there's things that are going to happen to your body that you might not be overly happy with, but you should have a level of acceptance because, you know, you're going to need that just to feel better throughout the whole process. I have to say, on the flip side of that, I'm now going towards the end stages of perimenopause. And without too much effort, my weight sort of stabilized and gone back down again. I definitely don't have the water retention. My diet's pretty good. You know, I do make good choices, and I think that helps. So as far as women who want to sort of have a little bit of control, looking at, you know, your food, if you can make some good choices rather than just being hungry and reaching for the chips, take a pause and take a little bit of a 2 second break and just go, oh, what might be a better choice right now? And not putting too much pressure on yourself, but just understanding that, you know, you are supporting your health by making good nutritional choices.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It doesn't last forever. And I'm glad to hear from you that you're saying it definitely improves when you get closer to menopause itself.
It also might just be a little bit of, going back to our initial conversation, it also might just be a level of acceptance as well. Like, oh. I like the way I look. I don't judge myself anymore. I used to, and I don't know if I look any different. I don't look back at old photos and compare because, like, I'm not that person anymore. Mm-hmm. So actually, you know, maybe it is a mindset thing as well. It's a huge, this is a huge rabbit hole we can keep digging down. But I do think that the reframing the whole time of our life, like the stop making this look like it's a dire consequence we've all got to go through. This is like a natural process that our body needs to go through. But I also think that then looking at that as like now the second half of our life's about to begin.
Right. Absolutely. And I think for a long time, the cultural norm said that at menopause, women become dried up old hags. Not my words.
Well, I might agree with that as far as my vagina's concerned. She's a dried up old hag. I'm really disappointed in her.
You see, this is where the 25-year-old lover comes along, right? This could flip the switch for you.
Oh my god! Oh, you think that's what I need?
Well, I'm not saying that's what you need. For me, I look at that and I go, oh my gosh, I don't know if I should burp him or hug him.
Anyways. So, but no, this has been a really great conversation. I feel like we could do this again. I just wanted you on the show because I really loved, just like I said, the way you really approach this whole thing. You've given women like a reason to sort of like get through the day. And I think that that's a great gift that you're giving somebody. I hope I'm doing the same thing, like showing them that, you know, this isn't the end. There's definitely things you can do to help yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, however you want to look at this. And that, like the Chinese would say, this is our second spring that we're approaching. This is
love a time. That.
Yeah, I know. I never used to. I used to think that that was an insult, but sort of part of me now is like, you know, it is. I'm coming out the other side and I'm feeling like I've got a lot to give now. And a lot of women are. I see a lot of women reinventing themselves, starting new businesses and actually giving a shit about themselves. And it's an amazing thing to see.
Lovely. That's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to be. Look at it. First of all, buck the norm of what that society wants us to believe happens to us in this time. Buck it. Who cares? Make your own version of it. Make it juicy. Make it what you need. Enough of listening to other people. Whatever it happens to be for you, that's what it's about. And looking at your life and saying, what have I not done yet that I want to double down on now? Right? Because as you have just confirmed, you get to the place in your perimenopause where you go, okay, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And what's next? Well, you get to create that. And so just something that is worth mentioning, you know, men generally, or our spouses, if we're in heterosexual relationships, are outside of the house working. And so they get to their retirement age and they go, I just want to be inside the house now. Whereas women are exactly the opposite. We've been inside the house taking care of the families and potentially our careers at the same time. We get to that second half and we want to go out and we want to discover. So you get to choose. That's a bit of a disconnect with what we believe retirement was supposed to be about.
You do get to choose, and I love that. And I like the idea of creating this juicy new norm for yourself. I think that's amazing. That's a really great, a great way to sort of like conclude this podcast, like saying, you know, what's next for you? It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Dr. Fiona Lovely, for coming on the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I told you, your voice is like caramel. I'm like sat in the chair going, oh, this is so nice.
Thank you. That's very kind. And thank you for having me. I very much enjoyed myself.
So I'll just tell people again, if you want to check out the podcast, it's called Not Your Mother's Menopause, and you can find that on Dr. Fiona Lovely's website. And is that just fionalovely.com?
It's drlovely.com.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.